This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
Good afternoon, Dr. Evangeline Mantzioris.
Good afternoon, Warren. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, but I'm very excited about talking to you because on the weekend I purchased a new slow cooker and I've tested it with a few things, but I haven't tested it with this dish that we always talk about here on Joy Drive that I reckon is going to solve all the problems in the world. Tell us about
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Well, you know.
Sorry?
Well, funnily enough, we've got the slow cooker on today for a meal tonight as well. So there you go.
What are you cooking?
Cooker with it. Meat with lots of veggies in it.
Oh, yum. Lots of veggies. And that's the key, isn't it? We need lots of veggies. So what is it about this dish that we always talk about and everyone wants to know what it is?
I know. We talk about your stew, don't you? And you add all sorts of stuff to it. Yeah. And it got me thinking, can we have an eternal soup? What do you think? Can we just carry this dish on forever and ever? Well, the interesting thing is there are a couple of restaurants overseas that do. And there's one in Bangkok and there's one in Japan.
Oh, really? My two favourite destinations.
Yeah. Well, in Bangkok, it is a soup that's been going for 49 years. And it's made from beef and goat. And every night, you know, once they sell however much is sold, they put the rest in the fridge and they bring the pot out the next day and they just keep adding more ingredients to it.
Oh, so it's not the soup is – that the soup recipe is 49 years old. The soup itself keeps going.
That's right.
Going.
Well, so it's like very small portion of it would be 49 years old, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they would have taken it out and served it. But that's right. And when they talk about it, they say it's very delicious, very aromatic, but they talk about that depth of flavour. And I think we all know when we have leftovers, they just taste so much better than on the day that they were actually cooked. So it's interesting, you know, because as you cook things, you change the structure of it and that may impart a different taste. And as you heat it again and again, it may vary the way that these nutrients are reacting.
What's the Japanese one, Evangeline?
Yeah, well, the one in Japan is dating back since 1945, so that's even older. That's almost, 60 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, they just keep adding things to it every day. So apparently it's in TripAdvisor. People keep going back.
Oh.
So we assume that no one has died from eating this perpetual soup.
I'm not going to make this casserole that we talk about perpetual, I will admit. I'll always do a fresh batch. Can we just talk about food safety there for a minute, though, because we don't want to make people think that they can cook something and keep it on their bench for 49 years.
That's right. You certainly can't. And look, and you've still got to be careful. So what these restaurants are doing is they're cooking it, they serve out of it, they keep it on the boil, and then when the restaurant closes, they take it off the heat and put it in the fridge. Now, you can say, well, what's the problem? If you're reheating it, surely you're going to kill all the bacteria. And yes, theoretically, you would kill most of the bacteria. But the concern is if a lot of bacteria multiply in that time, there will be a lot of bacteria to kill when you heat it again, so you may not kill them all. But more importantly, a lot of bacteria are actually harmful by the toxins they release. And there's a few that do that. Staphylococcus aureus, which people have probably heard of, Bacillus cereus, which we've talked about before with rice, and also another one called Clostridium. And they all produce toxins that actually cause the gastrointestinal effects. And the problem is that you cannot deactivate these toxins with heat. So no matter how long you heat it for, they will still be active. So you do need to put things back into the fridge as soon as they stop steaming. And we always talk about the danger zone is somewhere between 5 and 60 degrees.
So even if we kill the bacteria, boil the crap out of it, if the toxin's there, it's there. It doesn't matter. They've done their job and we can't get rid of it.
That's right.
Oh.
They've done their job. And it just depends on how many bacteria are in there and how much toxin they make and how much is needed, you know, to make you sick. But, of course, if you've got elderly people or young kids, they'll need a lot less to make them sick. So even if you think, oh, look, I've done it before and I'm fine, something could change in you. could be more bacteria, or, you know, you could have guests. So, yeah, you do really need to be careful with food safety.
Whilst we're still on the concept of reheating things, what does it do to the nutritional quality?
Yeah, look, this is the thing. So whilst it tastes better, and that could be because nutrients are being changed, a lot of nutrients will decrease in their bioavailability as they're heated. So vitamin C is the classic one.
Mm-hmm.
If you heat it, the amount of vitamin C in that product drops. So, you know, if you have lemon water and you have hot lemon water in winter, as soon as you add the lemon juice into the hot water, it's going to denature most of the vitamin C.
Oh,
likewise.
Can I just interrupt you there eventually?
Yeah.
So when we have, if we're feeling a bit off and we have a boiling hot water with some honey and lemon juice in it, there's no vitamin C really.
Yeah, you're practically getting rid of most of it. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Myth busted.
So, myth busted, that's right. And the other thing is, though, some become more bioavailable. So lycopene, which is in tomatoes, which is responsible for that beautiful red colour in tomatoes, actually becomes more available to our bodies when it's heated and when it's heated with oil. And that was why initially they saw lots of people in southern Italy who ate lots of red tomato pasta sauces had lower rates of heart disease and prostate cancer. It was because of the amount of lycopene they were getting in their pasta sauces.
Ah.
Yeah.
What else is in it?
But it gets more interesting. There's another group of food that many people try to avoid because they think it's bad, and that's the carb-based foods like potato, pasta and rice. But an interesting thing happens with them when we cook them and then chill them. In this process, actually more fiber is produced. And this fiber is actually called resistant starch. And it's what your gut microbiome really loves. So think about your soup or your stew. You've cooked it. You've got potato in it. You might have a bit of rosoni in it or pasta in it, you know, to bulk it out. You cool it. You've actually made more fiber in that potato, pasta and rice.
So if we go to the fridge in the morning, which I have been known to do, and you think, I'm so hungry, and you've pre-cooked some rice the night before, or you might have some leftover roast potatoes, it's good to go and eat them while they're cold.
That's right.
Because of the resistant starch. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, even if you reheat them, that resistant starch still stays there.
Ah, so it's the cooling process that creates it, it's there for good.
Yeah. So your potato salads are really good because you've cooked them and then you've cooled them. And that resistant starch is what your gut microbiome lives off and makes it more healthy. And it helps you make you feel more full, and it also helps to control your blood glucose levels. So, you know, those carbohydrate foods that some people tend to avoid because they think it's bad for them can be beneficial when they're cooked and cooled.
I'm glad you've mentioned this, because for breakfast I have rice with eggs on top and seaweed and some other stuff, and that, I mix it up and I have that for breakfast, something that I always do in Japan. I've kept it here as well. And but I cook a big batch of rice the night before, and I put it in the fridge overnight, and then I just reheat it the next day so I don't have to wait for rice in the morning for breakfast.
Right.
So I'd be getting resistant starch in that case.
That's right. Absolutely.
I love it. Absolutely love it.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Really, really good. Are there any other benefits that we should know about soup?
Look, if you burn it, and I'm not suggesting you're a bad cook at all, Warren, but if you do burn it and it catches at the bottom, that burning increases the presence of carcinogens in the food.
Okay.
So, you know, we've all done it. What you should do is try to scrape out the burnt bits and get rid of them. Or if it's just, you know, one ingredient that you've burnt in the beginning, like the onions, which is probably the one that I always stuff up on, you know, starting again and getting rid of them, because that burnt bit of food is carcinogenic. So, you know, important to try to get rid of that.
And for those who don't know, carcinogenic could potentially mean that it could cause cancer. Is that right?
That's right. So that burnt food could cause cancer. So we need to try and reduce the amount we have. And that's why the barbecued meat, which is really, you know, black, isn't good to consume. The slower you cook the food, the better off you are as well. So, yeah.
We're chatting with Dr. Evangeline Mantzioris, Program Director of Nutrition and Food Sciences at the University of South Australia, about some winter warming and nutritionally rich soups. I'd love you to join in the conversation. Tell us what your favourite soup is. The text number is 0427 569 949 or email onair@joy.org.au. Now, Evangeline, let's get to making, I mean, mine's more like a casserole than a soup. It's quite chunky and thick. What should we be adding? Where do we start? and what goes on in the pot?
Well, look, they always talk about the holy trinity of soup bases or stew bases, mm-hmm. whatever, you know, you want to do. And it's always the onion, the carrot and the celery. In Cajun and Creole cooking, it's onion, celery and capsicum. But you know what? Add all four of them. The thing is, the more vegetables you're able to get into your soup or your stew, the better off you're going to be. Because what we know from the evidence base is that, those people who get at least 30 different types of plant foods into their diet every week have a better microbiome. Mm-hmm. So you can put anything in. I don't think there's something that won't go in a soup.
Beans, lentils, all those things?
Yep, absolutely. Beans, lentils, dried peas, you know, any vegetables that are getting a little bit old in the fridge and you need to use them up quickly, they're the ideal thing to go into the soup or the casserole.
What about when it comes to the tomatoes, though? Is it like, you know, there's different types of tomatoes. Sometimes I'll buy fresh. Sometimes I'll think, oh, you know what, I'll buy canned tomatoes. I always go for the Australian canned tomatoes just as a little asterisk. Does it matter?
No, it doesn't. Look, if you've got lots of tomatoes, I mean, look, canned tomatoes are cheaper, right? So it's the obvious thing to put in. And they're also peeled, so you don't get that sort of irritating skin happening in your soup. But, you know, if you've got a whole lot of fresh ones, you can just quickly blanch them in water and get rid of the skin and just chop them up and put them in there as well.
Is the skin okay, though, to throw in if you don't mind it?
It is. It is. It's just it's hard to bite through, isn't it? It sort of rolls up and it goes a bit funny. But it's absolutely fine to use. And if you don't have, you know, canned tomatoes, using tomato passata or paste is going to be fine as well. And if you're really desperate, just use canned tomato soup as a base as well.
Oh, I haven't had that for ages. My mum used to have that as a cook it as a kid for an emergency meal with some toast. What about the oil? When we start, we want to fry our onions and garlic to make this amazing dish that we all talk about. Which oil is best? I'll confess, I use macadamia oil and olive oil, I'm assuming because they're okay. What do you suggest?
Absolutely. Look, the ones like olive oil, avocado oil, which are almost like a whole fruit oil and they're extracted with cold extraction, are the ones that tend to have more nutrients in them. So they're the best ones to use, but they are expensive, right?
That's true.
Particularly at the moment, olive oil has just skyrocketed in price. So, you know, at that point, I'd love to say always use extra virgin olive oil, but you know, whatever oil you use is going to be fine. Try to avoid, you know, the coconut oil. You know, the evidence around there is that it may not be so good for heart problems. So, you know, using a polyunsaturated or a monounsaturated oil like canola oil, preferably olive oil. But, you know, if it's getting too pricey, going to, you know, vegetable oil or canola oil or sunflower oil, something like that. And, you know, just lightly frying your onion to soften it. You can add a bit of garlic at that stage as you want and then adding the carrot and the celery as well to it, chopped up. And then you've got a beautiful base to then add, you know, whatever flavours you like. And the other thing to add is herbs and spices.
Okay. Any?
Any, whatever you like. What are your favourite?
I just, you know what? I just throw whatever is in the pantry. I tend to buy, like, you know, the Italian mix or the Greek mix or something like that that's already got a few in it. And I just, I don't know, I just throw everything in and it always tastes yummy. I never go wrong with my slow cooking soup. Got a couple of soups that have come in, Evangeline. Someone says lentil soup.
Oh, yes. What sort of lentil soup? Did they give it a name?
No, just lentil soup because, and baked pumpkin. Pumpkin in its skin.
Yes. Yep. There are my favourites. In fact, my favourite is a lentil soup, but it's a Greek lentil soup.
Oh.
And I don't know if I can say this live on radio. The name of it in Greek is a little bit. Are you sure?
Yes. Go for it. We're all dying to know now.
Okay. It's called Faki.
Ah. You too.
And it's a very, very simple soup, and it's almost what I'd call the soup that, you know, that got the country through, you know, war and starvation. So basically it's just brown lentils and you have a little bit of chopped onion in it, which is very lightly fried in a very small amount of oil. You add the lentils, you add water, you add a couple of bay leaves to it. A little bit of sliced garlic in it, and that's it at its most basic form. And then you can add vinegar to it to make it a more what we call rich or plush soup. Mm-hmm. You can add a little bit of tomato paste in it and some chopped carrots and celery. But even without that, it is really one of my favourite soups, and it's beautiful with white crusty bread.
Evangeline, Despina says olive pomace oil. Is it good for you?
Olive pomace oil, which I think is the skins of the olive, which is extracted.
I also say it's yummy.
Yeah. So, yeah, look, it is. And it's best that we can use all the bits of the olive, you know, that you get. Mm. So, yeah, that is good too. So, basically, an oil that comes from a plant, aside from palm oil and coconut, is going to be fine.
Evangeline, before we finish up, we have spoken before about a chemical process that happens when you are frying in olive oil and you've got the garlic and the onion, something happening. Or is it once we get it into the pot and everything's cooking together, there's all these reactions that happen that don't happen elsewhere?
Are you talking about advanced glycation endpoints?
Is that it? Yes.
Is that it? Yeah.
I know it's not a nuclear reaction, yeah, but other than that.
That's what we call the caramelization that occurs.
Ah, okay, right.
Yeah, so that caramelization is what makes lots of food really, you know, flavoursome and what we enjoy, and, you know, that crispy bit of the chicken or the meat, and that's really good. It tends to happen more with high protein foods, but even with foods that don't have a lot of protein in it, you can get that caramelization. Look, a little bit is fine, but if it's a major thing that's happening in the food, it begins to become problematic as you get older and your body can't clear these advanced glycation endpoints from your body. But, you know, more problematic, as I said, with lots and lots of meat products. So people don't need to worry about it with, you know, if they've got soups. It doesn't mean you don't put meat in them. You know, with these soups or stews, you can get away with really small amounts of meat in it because it just contributes that beautiful umami flavour in it as well. So, you know.
One more question, Evangeline, that is, if we make a soup that's full of veggies, etc., are we ticking the box in terms of our daily requirement of vegetable intake?
Absolutely.
Oh, look, great.
Yeah. So we need about 5 cups of cooked vegetables. No, sorry, 1 serve of cooked vegetables, 1/2 cup. Mm-hmm. So if you've got about 2.5 cups of soup, you've rocked your daily vegetable intake.
Brilliant. I'm making it this weekend. Evangeline, great to chat with you. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Excellent. See you later.
See you. That's Dr. Evangeline Mantzioris, Program Director of Nutrition and Food Sciences at the University of South Australia. There you go. We just need to make this soup and we get our serving of fruit and vegetables.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.